Welcome to the Educational Passages Podcast. This is the Miniboat Traffic Report. Educational Passages is a nonprofit organization that seeks to connect people around the world to the ocean and each other through unique global experiences. I'm your host, Cassie Stymist.
Since our last traffic report on February 20th, we saw one landing, three recoveries, and four launches. A lot of things happened this last month in the Atlantic, both north and south, but no new boats were launched in the Pacific, although we have heard rumblings that a mini boat may have been recovered in Indonesia. We've been watching Nessie in the western part of the Pacific, Liberty, which unfortunately stopped reporting on the 13th in the southwestern part, and Butterfly of the Sea is reporting intermittently southeast of Nessie, but Destiny is still going strong in the middle, southwest of Hawaii. The Sacred Heart Star of the Sea continues to sail between 56 and 57 degrees latitude, which is about 700 nautical miles southwest of New Zealand. It started back in January and was the first miniboat launch of the year. For the last 74 days, we've seen it travel over 1,800 nautical miles. The most southern it traveled was to 57.63 degrees south on March 12th, but then it started heading north towards Macquarie Island until the 18th. Then it didn't report for 5 days and popped up directly east on the 23rd over 60 nautical miles away. This was all across the Macquarie Fault Zone, which is where the Australian and Pacific plates meet. Over in New England, we saw the Scarborough Sailor launched and recovered in Cape Cod Bay on March 10th and 11th. This was the third miniboat from the Falmouth High School's fleet that's studying cold stun sea turtle strandings. The other two boats in the project were launched back in December and had short trips then as well. For this research, it's really important that we launch and track multiple voyages to capture different time periods and therefore different influences on the boat paths. This will in turn help us to better understand how cold stun sea turtles will also move around Cape Cod Bay in the wintertime. We did this originally in 2019 with Riptide, and those results are now in process of being published. We now also have the extra sensor packages on these boats thanks to the support of the Falmouth Education Foundation, so we can capture other data in addition to just the effects of the wind which the mini boats provide because of the sail. So students are now looking into the results of their work this school year. If you want to get involved, explore the data, or just learn more about the project, we'll be sure to add a link in the show notes for you to research. These three mini boats from the Turtle Project were actually all previously launched boats and each have their own very unique stories and voyages they've taken. The Riptide, as we mentioned, was part of the original 2019 turtle study in the same area, Cape Cod Bay. The Rockstar was actually the first mini boat with sensors and also took a short trip. The Scarborough Sailor back in 2017, though, after an excursion into southern New England waters south of Martha's Vineyard, turned northeast into the Gulf of Maine and ended up in New Brunswick, Canada's Campobello Island in the Bay of Fundy. Our friend Jim Manning has been holding on to the Scarborough Sailor since 2017 in his office at NOAA, and since he retired last year, he wanted to put it to good use and offered it up and the others to be part of this turtle project for the students in Falmouth. So thanks, Jim, for paying it forward and keeping these stories going. Speaking of the Gulf of Maine, we are still tracking the Wildcat Wave from Windham, New Hampshire, which started its journey right at the edge of the continental shelf in the Gulf of Maine only 2 months ago. The winds were perfect at the time, and we saw the boat sail right into the Gulf Stream. However, we noticed it may have escaped the main Gulf Stream a little after February 23rd, and looking at the path analysis tool, I'm seeing 20 to 40 knot wind speeds at that time, and wow, actually there's 61 knots here on February 26th. I'm going to go ahead and put in a prediction here that this one might end up in the Azores, but I would love to hear everyone else's predictions. Another New Hampshire mini boat, the Clipper Ripper from Portsmouth Middle School, has joined the fleet. This one was also inspired by the Rye Riptide story, as was the Wildcat, and was launched by the same company as Wildcat, the Little Bay Lobster Company out of Newington, New Hampshire. They launched the Clipper Ripper from a different vessel, this one from the fishing vessel Gladys Elaine on March 17th, but about 100 nautical miles northwest of where Wildcat Wave was launched. So this launch happened over Georgia's Basin, which is one of three basins in the Gulf of Maine. And they launched it on their way to their fishing grounds, just as the other one. The main boat sailed up and over Browns Bank, which is across the Northeast Channel from Georgia's Bank. That area is where we mentioned Wildcat Wave was launched from. It hugged the continental shelf for a couple days and then finally went south, which would get it close to the Gulf Stream. But then just the other day, it took a turn as the wind shifted again. This morning, it looks like it has finally looped back around, is heading in the right path to the Gulf Stream. So we'll see what happens over the next couple days. But something extra fun about the Clipper Ripper is that students put a Maker Buoy sensor pack on this one. So that means we're able to observe the air and water temperature along the voyage. And because of the pitch data that we can get from these, we have actually observed the boat getting flipped over and back again. So we're starting to see the real evidence and the effects of some major wind and wave action. I want to point out that you can check out the path analysis tool and change the base map to explore some of these features and see it kind of visually. So part of what we want to encourage you with all of these traffic reports is to go and explore beyond the surface, above and below. So that's just a great tool that can help you do that. The Purple Hurricane from Washington Park Elementary School in Georgia, launched back in November, was only 200 nautical miles in front of the Wildcat Wave during the last traffic report, but has now advanced to almost 500 nautical miles away because of how the Wildcat Wave appears to be caught up. The Purple Hurricane is over halfway across the Atlantic now, and in about 250 nautical miles will cross over the Mid-Atlantic Ridge north of the Azores. So where do you think it will go after that? Ireland, Portugal, the Arctic? Again, check out the map and see what I'm talking about, where the Wildcat Wave is and why I think it might end up over in the Azores, whereas the Purple Hurricane is still on the faster path, I would say. The Lady Lance is also now caught up in the middle of the Atlantic Gyre. The last update, we thought she was well in the Gulf Stream, but on February 24th, she started to travel south and even cross paths where Wildcat Wave had traveled over the same spot. But on February 26th, both boats seemed to have been affected by these strong winds. There were 400 nautical miles separating them at the time, but I would be curious to look back and see what weather was in the area at that time. Lady Lance is now traveling a little under one knot, and unfortunately the electronics are reporting intermittently, so I'm really hoping this one will also find its way over to the Azores so our friends there can check it out, repair them, and we can get it sent back out. But that one's still got 450 nautical miles to go if it were to go to the Azores, so the adventure continues. It's been really interesting to watch the data from the orientation sensor on these Maker Buoy sensor packs, as we can gain a better understanding of how the ocean conditions are moving these boats. The resulting data from the sensor is pitch, which tells us the boat's angle off vertical and also heading. And for those that are interested, the sensor is an inertial measurement unit, an IMU, which we call the orientation sensor. And it combines an accelerometer, magnetometer, and gyroscope data to get accurate orientation output. So I just want to give a big shout out to Wayne and his Maker Buoy again for creating this awesome system. And Wayne also has it set up so that we can receive alerts from the system. For example, the Lancer, Lady Lance's predecessor, which was launched back in December from the Canary Islands, also has one of these sensor packs. And he set up an alert to tell us when the pitch is reported greater than 90 degrees. This would let us know that the boat is either on its side or upside down. The nautical term for this would be turtled if it were upside down, and capsized capsized if it were on its side. Well, on March 16th, we received an alert, and because the Lancer also had a camera connected, Wayne decided to request a picture to see if that roll caused any damage. And guess what? The image came back with a very interesting result. I'll point out that the last picture we had received was on March 7th and showed the sail fully intact. But on March 16th, the image showed us that the boat had dismasted, which means the mast came off. So we requested a higher resolution image to get a better look, and it actually appears that the sail may even still be attached at the bow and dragging because it's still looped with the line on the pad eyes. So I want to ask you what you think, because the picture is posted on the Lancer's page. So have a look for yourself. And will the lack of sail move the boat differently now? I know we've talked about this in particular on the Science Behind the Mini Boats podcast episode with our friends at URI. I think we talked about Square Mile in particular, where I pointed out that boats that end up in the Azores don't tend to have the sail on them. And then it turned out later last June on World Ocean Day, our friends in Horta went and rescued the boat, and sure enough, the sail was dragging. And so it had dismasted and was just following the currents. So this image from Lancer is now a piece of evidence that helps us to better understand what is happening to the boats out at sea and exactly what might be causing the boats to dismast. Being able to identify this is going to be a huge development, as it will help researchers be able to better understand the wind's effect on surface currents. So what next? How will Lancer travel now that it has no sail? The Lancer is in a different area of the Atlantic than the Square Mile was when we had that conversation, and not many mini boats have traveled west across the Atlantic like this before, so we have limited data to help us make this prediction. But what do you think? Will it still make its way to the Caribbean, or will it loop around? We're also keeping an eye on the HVS Cruiser, which was launched a whopping 502 days ago. Sorry for missing the 500th day on that on Wednesday, but it has a little smaller sail than normally, so that's also been interesting to watch. It's currently about 50 nautical miles north of Madeira over in the eastern Atlantic. This 500 plus day voyage of HVS Cruiser started in Ireland. It was originally from Charleston, South Carolina, and ended up in Ballycroy, Ireland in 2017. By 2021, the boat had been repaired and was ready to head back to sea, complete with the artwork from over 300 school children all around Cork. And speaking of Ireland, as last week was St. Patrick's Day, which is a day to celebrate Irish culture, I want to make a shout out to the 11 miniboats that have come from or landed in Ireland. A couple are active this year, with Caitlin and Stephanie leading the Ravencaster relaunch project in Achill Island, the Crimson Current getting ready to be sent back out of Cork, the Galway Sailor still up in Norway, and the Spirit of Galway now in Côte d'Ivoire, and also the Mini Main is undergoing repairs and an upgrade from County Kerry. These boats are connecting back to students and communities in Newfoundland and Labrador, New Jersey, Maine, and all over the place, really. It's been really great to see all of the students supporting each other to keep these adventures going and to help us all learn a little bit more about the Irish culture. This last month, we solved a couple mysteries, actually. I'll tell you two really good stories about those. They're both from the Pogo NF miniboat fleet. The first is that it looks like our theory about El Cisne Alto being picked up at sea was correct. At the beginning of March, we noticed it was heading south to Brazil, but the winds and currents were not going in that direction. And since the speed didn't seem to change too much from the normal miniboat track, we really looked to the sensor pack for helping us make this prediction because it gave us a little bit more information. We then watched as it headed into the port of Natal in Rio Grande do Norte, Brazil, on March 3rd. Then Dr. Lillian Krug, scientific coordinator for Pogo, took a quick lead to reach out to colleagues and networks who could help with the successful recovery and transfer of the boat to a local school. Special thanks to Juan Dijo for picking the boat up and bringing it to the port. He was out fishing, so that was true. And thanks to Protomar, who connected us with him at the dock. That connection is a good story in itself, as it turns out that Dr. Sordo, a friend of Dr. Krug, who lives in Portugal, actually, had a colleague who connected us with a professor down there that had connections at Protomar, which is the fish processing company there at the docks. And they're going to keep the boat safe for us as we work to locate a school and the Institute de Navegar to connect students around and make this project full circle. So that's really exciting. And we also have answers to what happened to Schnellevella. So this is another really good story. Schnellevella is the first miniboat from the Pogo fleet that was launched from the Nosoat cruise last September. It sailed across the Atlantic and landed on a beach in Guyana back on December 4th. We quickly reached out to lots of local organizations and put out some flyers to try and connect with someone there that could recover the boat from the beach and bring it to a nearby school. Our attempts failed though, and at the end of January, we watched as the boat relocated to Mabaruma, about 12 miles south of where the boat landed on Shell Beach. Again, we put out flyers on social media and tried to connect with the finders or anyone in Guyana, but to no avail. Well, something I like to say and remind people with this program is to never lose hope, because you really don't know what is going to happen or when. So I was at the grocery store a few weeks ago, and I got a text from Greg Rowe of BHS Rowboat and BHS Row Rida fame. Greg sent me a text along the lines of, "Hey, I didn't know a miniboat landed in Guyana. Jill just came back from a work trip there." So I guess I should back it up a little bit here. Jill is Greg's wife, and Jill was recently on a work trip for the company RPS. RPS are the ones who designed and maintain our path analysis tool. They're based in Rhode Island, but they're a global company, and they're great supporters of our program and actually the ones that originally connected us with Greg. Okay, so back to the story. My reply to Greg was something along the lines of, "Say what? Or are you kidding me?" And after I told him the boat was moved to Mabaruma and then it turned out to be Jill's favorite place she visited, my reply was something more like, "Am I on candid camera here?" It wasn't long before Jill and I were texting each other. She immediately offered to help us out and send emails the following day. She then shared some pictures from her trip, and it was just so nice to see and get to know a new place where I knew the miniboat had made its way towards. And not even 24 hours after I sent the details to Jill, she had not only connected with her new friends in Mabaruma and all over Guyana, but get this, they found the miniboat. I couldn't believe it. It's so nice to add a chapter to the story. I don't want to say it completes it because it's not the end. But even though the boat has been stripped of the electronics and the keel looks like it may have come out early in its voyage, we're going to focus on connecting communities because that is what this is all about. We can use this as an opportunity to meet new people and share with them what this project has taught us all so far. And now we get to learn about the communities in Guyana. So I'm looking forward to that very much, but this also helps to bring a little bit more hope to the others in the Pogo fleet and maybe other mini boats out there that have also kind of lost contact that eventually will have additional parts to their stories documented, because you just never know what's going to happen. I really do love connecting classrooms with these mini boats. It's such an amazing opportunity. And in February, I got to see the students in Norwalk, Connecticut, USA, meet students at Danielson School in Sotra, Norway. Kenneth Bruvik, the environmental advocate who has been helping us so much with the miniboat Conscriptus that landed there, was also in the room and brought along some friends and colleagues, including Marta Hav, who's a researcher at NORCE. She joined us on Zoom, but is also a researcher studying microplastics. And Ingvar, who is the research director of autonomous systems at NORCE as well. Turns out that Ingvar has been working on autonomous, you can call them mini boats, for years. He leads the offshore sensing company and their manned surface vessel is called Sail Buoy. This will be really fun to compare and contrast with our mini-boat, and Ingvar has been kind enough to already provide a status report on the condition of Conscriptus and to help make necessary repairs. So our plan is to repair the boat and get the sensor back online, and maybe then we can really start to compare and contrast with Sail Buoy. That'll be fun. Other students from Brian McMahon's Marine Science Academy joined the Zoom call as well back in Connecticut, some of whom are leaders of the school's conservation and environmental clubs, and it looks like this is the start of something really great. There was talk of conducting beach cleanups in both places and comparing what they find, and then uploading that data to some global programs so that researchers like Marta could learn from it as well. This is so great, really a full circle moment and something I've always wanted the program to grow into these action projects. After communities are connected, really learning about each other, contributing to making the ocean a better place. And coming up, we're supporting two schools in the Canary Islands who are building new mini boats with sensors. This is an extension of the iFATO project with our partners at PLOCAN. We'll be connecting them with students to meet and exchange stories beforehand, and together they can track all the boats in May. We also continue supporting other relaunches that will be happening soon. There are quite a few being planned, including the relaunch of Hope and Special from the USS Constitution Museum's fleet. Those two are actually getting relaunched with two new mini boats from this school year groups. The Sullivan's Island Elementary School in South Carolina paired up Special along with their new mini boat, the Dream Sailor. Both boats were loaded on the MV Colorado Express into the care of Ryan Guthrie, who has been helping out the students with the project. Ryan is the navigation officer for the ship. The ship is a container vessel owned and operated by Hapag-Lloyd USA. After a short trip to Savannah, Georgia, and a stop in Norfolk, Virginia, the ship headed out for its transatlantic voyage. They decided not to launch the mini boats during these smaller trips, as the weather was not ideal. Ryan shared a message with us during these transits and said, "We use a pretty sophisticated satellite-based weather routing system that I have been monitoring closely in order to choose the best time to launch the boats. The 10-day outlook, starting from today, looks favorable." And just yesterday, on March 23rd, they ended up launching both of the boats about 500 nautical miles east of Norfolk, Virginia, where they had left from. Ryan shared a detailed description for the students about the launch process, which was great, and we'll post that on the boats page for you all to read as well. They shared all the conditions at the launch site too, and said the winds were out of the south-southwest at 21 knots, and the air temperature was 70 degrees. The Dream Sailor also has one of the Maker Buoy sensor packs, and it reported temperatures of 66 degrees at the water surface once the boat was launched. Ryan said the cadets on board documented the whole launch process with videos and pictures, and we will share those all when we can. And soon we will also see the Episcopal School of Jacksonville in Florida relaunch Hope, along with their new boat, the Sea Eagle. I just love how serendipitous it was that Hope and Special landed on the beaches right near these schools who are starting on their own mini boat adventures in the fall. It's almost like they wanted to provide some orientation and guidance, and how great for the students to connect with those in Boston throughout the process too. And finally, here's an update on events and activities that you may be interested in taking part in. The Data Jam deadline has passed. It was March 15th, and we've already received word that there are some entries related to the mini boat. I know I'm super excited to see the data from Rowrida get analyzed and see what people have learned from it so far. Next week, March 31st, is the deadline for the 4th annual Recycle Regatta. This is something we started with New England Science and Sailing and the North American Marine Environment Association back in 2020. Students in grades K-12, anyone at home, are invited to submit their entries and take part in the competition. It is free, and prizes will be awarded for each fleet, which is organized by grade level. So visit recycleregatta.info for more and be sure to submit your entries by March 31st. The Ocean Climate Nexus Conference that was planned for next week has been canceled, but we'll be sharing more details and an update on the Project OCN in future podcast episodes for sure. And of course, we're all still tracking the Lancer that they sent back out. And on a final note, spots are filling really, really fast for the next school year already. So if you're interested in building your own new mini boat and ordering a kit, please, please let us know if you're interested so that we can get you on the list or get you connected with another school so that you can take part in the adventure. That's it for this week's mini boat traffic report. Head on over to the Educational Passages website, educationalpassages.org/at-sea, to explore the tracks and stories yourself. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of the Educational Passages podcast. Educational Passages is a nonprofit organization. Please consider making a donation to help us continue our work, bringing people together to learn more about the ocean. To donate, visit educationalpassages.org/support. If you're enjoying this program, please consider subscribing to the podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or from wherever you download your podcasts. Thanks for listening.